listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. It's so wonderful to have you along. And we've got our, she's not going to like this, but I'm going to call her our resident health guru, Dr. Sarah Farrant. We're so lucky to have her. She's a lady that not only teaches health, but actually practices it. And we got her along this morning for something very special. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Rodney, and good morning to our listeners. It's great to be back. Months roll around very fast, don't they?
They do. Now, I love this. You're just an inspiration to me. At times I feel a bit inadequate, but I know you're such a gentle soul that you're encouraging. But you and your husband came up with, was it 20 things you teach and reinforce with your kids, who are wonderful children, and you're going to share 10 with us today and 10 with us next time you're on, and we're going to walk through them because they're amazing.
The top 20 things we keep teaching our kids. So this is irrespective of what age they are, right? It's, you know, and I think when I'm in my 80s or 90s or close to 100, I'll still be teaching these things to our kids. And I think in most families, Rodney, I'm making a blanket kind of judgment here, that lots of parents want to teach their kids, you know, kindness and respect and empathy, or, you know, other things along that kind of vein of thought. However, for us, we always came from the perspective that those types of things were going to be a given, that because of our home education, because our children were close to us in terms of our day-to-day living, that we would be able to instill and teach those things just by the mere fact that they were going to be around us. It didn't necessarily need to be a lesson per se. So role modeling, those kinds of things. But the things that we keep teaching our kids, these were teaching points. They're not necessarily something that I could role model necessarily, although some of them could be. So the first one, if I
just tell us the background first, Sarah.
So
did your husband sort of sit down and draft these up, or did they evolve?
Well, they kind of evolved, but I put it together probably about maybe 20 years ago, a couple of decades ago. And a lot of them came from my teaching and what my parents had taught me, but a lot of them as well also come from the lessons that myself and my husband learned along the way, be that through something that we experienced, something that we learned, something that we were taught ourselves, or the wisdom that we got from somewhere, and they were like, okay, we would like to instill that understanding into our family nucleus as well. And family nucleus, I mean myself, my husband, and our three kids.
Your kids are largely grown up now. What's their feedback on these lessons? You've obviously would have had that from them.
Well, you know, yes, and some of them we say over and over again, you know, and then sometimes the rolled eyes come back, and sometimes you might start and they can finish it off for you because they've heard it so many times. But I guess that's the art of parenting, isn't it? It's constantly showing up. It's constantly being present. It's constantly having love in your heart to give the lessons, to give the teachings, to instill that hopefully they will carry forward in their families.
Wonderful.
So, you know, our kids could rattle them off, but again, they're not necessarily – it's not like it's something that is a rote learning, I can regurgitate this. These are more things that are way of life, of wisdom and understanding, as opposed to academia things, if that makes sense.
Number one.
Number one is trust yourself. So, and again, these are in no particular order, right? So when I wrote this, I just wrote as a kind of like a data dump from my brain onto the paper. So they're in no particular order. And maybe I should go back and put them in an order, but I didn't want to put them in an order because they are there's no hierarchy to them. You know, the lessons just come out when they need to come out. So it was more of what can I put on paper? There's no order to it necessarily. But the first one, you know, that we go through is called Trust Yourself. And I was taught this as a very young age from, I guess, my dad. He said, trust no one but yourself, always back yourself. And the way I could describe this in the simplest way for yourself and for our listeners is that when I was studying psychology, there was some research that came out at the time that said when children do an activity or something that you ask them to do, if you have the word don't in front of it, then they're going to process the don't part to understand what you do want them to do. So let me give you an example. If you're in the kitchen and you have a young child and you say to them, here, Johnny, carry the plate to the table, don't drop it, or here's the plate, take it to the table, don't drop it. So Johnny has to actually process don't drop, has to process dropping the plate before he understands not to drop the plate. So for us, our parenting perspective was always about what do we want our children to do rather than what we don't want them to do. So if we gave our child a plate in the kitchen to take to the table, we would say, hold tight to the plate, walk it to the table and put it on the table. So then they're doing something. They don't have to process that don't part of it, the dropping of a plate, in order to action what we want them to do. So for me, that was always a step that would help instill trust in them. So trust that I can carry the plate and I can put it on the table. And then as a result of that, you go through life trusting yourself, but also then starting to know what you do want and you do like. And then as you get older, you're able to, you know, go into those, especially if someone asks you, you know, what do you want to do, Rodney, with your life? Isn't it so much easier for us to say what we don't want than what we do want?
Mm.
So for us, it was a journey of constantly saying to our kids what we want them to do.
That is so funny about the plate.
Yeah.
Well, I'm clumsy, but I have distinct memories of this sort of situation to this day. If you said to me, carry the plate to the table and don't drop it, as a little kid and possibly as an adult, I'd be carrying the plate and I'd be saying to myself, I'm going to drop this. I'm going to drop it. I know I'm going to drop it. And then drop it. Because yeah. I'm focusing on entirely the wrong thing.
And
I almost have that as a default position, you know, that I think about what can go wrong and focus on that and almost make it happen because that's what's on my mind.
Yeah. And most kids do that.
And you can see this with little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
So always coming wonderful from that position. And sometimes it's that pause in the parent, right? Before you go to say, or a grandparent, you know, depending on our audience and listeners' age, it's that catch yourself when you are saying something to your child to say, okay, what do I want them to do? How can I say it in a way that then don't have to process a don't part of it, you know, with it. They don't have to drop the plate in order to understand that you want them to hold it, right? So just say, hold the plate, you know, Johnny, and pop it on the table.
And you'd be teaching kids to trust themselves from the get-go.
Trust that, you know, back yourself. Well, you know, we have, and it probably comes up in another point as we go through this, but I could always say it twice, is that we, trusting yourself, we are born with you know, this extraordinary nerve system. And the nerve system is what we use to sense our world, our outside world, which changes the physiology of what we have inside of us. But we have the nerve system and our senses, you know, from our hearing to our sight to our, you know, our smell, our taste, a kinesthetic, our touch. These are our senses that that we use to sense our world, but we have also instincts. Other people might call it intuition. And so how do we teach our kids to constantly trust themselves? And it's like the, if I give you this example of, you know, maybe we have this person that the child hasn't seen for a period of time arrive at our house, and we give them a hug, hello, and little Johnny is standing beside us, and we say to Johnny, oh, here's, you know, Sally, give Sally a hug. And little Johnny's like, no. And they're like, no, go on, give
I know,
give
Sally that a is hug. So terrible. And they've got whiskers.
Yeah.
Or something, right?
Or something.
Or there's something about them a bit creepy and the little kid detects it. Oh, yes. God, that is so – I used to hate that.
Yeah, and so what we're doing then in those moments is that we're teaching kids to go against their instinct to listen to parental authority, and now you're wanting me to hug this person, but I actually don't want to hug them. So again, it's about looking at the child or the grandchild, and if they don't want to do that, then trust them that that's not the right energy or what they're meant to be doing. And because that then helps them trust their instincts, and it's our instincts, it's our senses and how we interplay those senses with the world that protects us. You know, so trusting ourselves, you know, is learned in lots of different ways, but there's just two of the ways.
And trust yourself being number one actually relates to number two, because if you trust yourself, you don't trust yourself, you'll be always doing what others think you should be doing, like your peers.
Mm.
And that can be a disaster. And that relates to your number two, which is?
Which is find out what everybody else is doing and run like hell in the opposite direction. My dad, again, he taught me that, but he would fill in a little bit at the end. He would say, Sarah, find out what everybody else is doing and run like hell in the opposite direction, because that's where it is at, whatever it was. So he taught me from a young age that it's okay to be different. It's okay to separate yourself out when your instincts or your senses say that that's not where I'm meant to go. And again, when we look at the educational system, for instance, it's so much about is conformity, isn't it? It's about let's just follow the leader. If there's a leader or a kid that stands out, they'll take the peer group with them. And for me, I remember going through school and always being an outlier. I was always outside. And it was one of the things that I wanted to teach our kids, because it is so true, you know, find out what people are doing and run like hell in the opposite direction, because that's usually where it's at. Be that in lots of things as you go and experience life. So I was very grateful for this lesson on it's okay to be different. It's okay to, you know, stand out in different ways.
Yes, so good. My middle girl just wants to fit in and conform. And you can see her in a peer group and you realize how dangerous it is.
Mm.
And she has a little bit of anxiousness, and it's like, what if they said, you know, you'll be our friend if you do X, she'd do X.
Mm.
Just to fit in. And it breaks my heart to see. And you're giving me the tools to deal with that. Thank you so much. Number two, see what others are doing and run like hell the other direction. I love it.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe it's as simple as telling her that statement.
Yes. Know, no, I agree.
Find out what everyone's doing and run like hell, you know. Like, yeah. It's
so good. Oh, no, I so appreciate it. And it's wonderful because you sent these to me and I read them and I thought they were wonderful, but hearing you explain them is, they lodge in you so much better. Number three.
So you have all the answers inside of you. Ask the question and trust your answer. This one, Rodney, was taught to me at the age of 7 when my dad placed his hand on my heart. And he said, you have all the answers inside of you. Ask the question, trust your answer. And I guess it kind of ties into number one, which is trust yourself. But he really, you know, in that instance, that changed my life. Just having someone with so much certainty and so much clarity. And it's the person with the most certainty always wins.
Yes.
And the fact that he had such clarity and he looked straight into my eyes through to the soul of my body and he taught me that, you know, at the age of 7, it absolutely changed my life. And that is one of the things I do consistently speak with the kids about, because if there is some challenging situation, then it's about, okay, let's ask some different questions so we can take a 10,000 foot view and look down on what is actually really going on, and then what would be your answers to that, and step forward with whatever your answer is. Whether that is what I would do or not, it's not my experience. My job as a parent is to help guide those conversations so they can put more bows in their quiver of life to draw upon as they, you know, grow older. My job is really to help them ask those questions to see where, you know, something that may be occurring in their life is taking them down one path, whereas really they could go down another path if we ask those different questions.
The emphasis is on asking the questions of yourself.
Yeah. And that probably brings up point number 4. Unless you're going to say something. Sorry, were you going to say something?
No, it's just the wisdom of this. Your dad was amazing.
He was. He was a very humble man. If you met him, you wouldn't think he had this much wisdom in him. You really wouldn't. He was just a great guy that loved, he enjoyed people, he worked hard, but he has lessons, and I imagine that those lessons also came from my grandfather to him and the journey that my dad took, you know, along the way. He was an avid reader. He did enjoy reading, especially when I was younger. But point 4, as you were saying, you were alluding to the questions, point 4 is everything you were told is not necessarily true. You know, ask the questions and form your own conclusions. And I've always said to our kids, the quality of whatever you're going through or the quality of your life is based on the quality of your questions. If you're not asking great questions, then your outcomes aren't going to be great. But if you can take that 10,000-foot view, look down on any situation, ask some different questions, then different doors are going to open as a result of you being able to do that. And the same thing goes with our health. You know, although I haven't done any research on this, and I'm not necessarily a researcher, I'm the first one to admit that, I'm more of a philosopher and asking the questions, that I believe that there is a direct relationship between someone's expression of their health and the questions that they're asking themselves. So the quality of the question really matters in terms of the direction that we take in our life. And I believe that my parents had given me, and also through my own journey and my own reading, et cetera, I've become really good at being able to ask the questions that are sitting there below the surface that people can't see, that connect the dots in completely different ways that people hadn't thought of, and then they get these aha moments.
It's amazing. So wonderful. Next one.
Next one is number 5, and it probably leads on from the quality of the questions and into this understanding that you are a self-healing, self-regulating, self-regenerating, and self-maintaining organism that's constantly adapting to your life. And if we really look at the body, Rodney, we see that we are self-healing, right? If we cut our finger, it will heal. It's not a Band-Aid that's going to go on it and do the healing. In fact, that's going to actually create more challenges. You want to have sun, you want to have saliva on it. You know that your body can actually heal. And if it can heal itself from a cut, then it can heal itself anywhere up to dyshyphen, ease, and disease within the body. So we know that, and there's lots of people in the world that can affirm that and attest to changes that they have undertaken in their body physically, chemically, and emotionally that have created the healing states of their body. And then we look at the self, regulating, then we see that our body has this internal homeostatic mechanism. It's this feedback loop that is constantly giving us, internal intuitive awareness to what is going on inside and the imbalance that we may have. So the body is always wanting us to be well-regulated and well-balanced. And by that, I mean we have, for instance, toxic and tonic reactions occurring in the body at the exact same time. The body is regulating that. We have a regular breathing pattern. You know, our heart is beating with its own electrical supply and neurological connection. And we're not thinking about that. We're not saying heart beat. You know, we're not saying breathe now. We're not saying blink our eyes because we haven't done that for a while. We're not telling our skin to slough. The body is taking care of it. And within that regeneration regulation, we also have self-regeneration. So our organs regenerate pretty much within a year. We've got a new body that we are sitting in physically, chemically, and emotionally, and therefore the body can then use its internal mechanisms to maintain that through, again, that homeostatic feedback loop. So we are extraordinary in this, you know, self-healing, self-regulating, self-maintaining, and self-regenerating organism that's constantly adapting to our environment. And that adaptation, as I was talking about before, occurs via our nerve system, where our internal innate intelligence is in interaction with the external universal intelligence. And it's that interaction that enables our nerve system to adjust accordingly inside based on our physical, our chemical, and our emotional impact internally. And that's extraordinary. You know, people can connect with that. You realize that actually my body is capable of anything in life.
Yes, it's amazing. And it's true, and it's dimly understood in terms of our science of our body. But what a wonderful thing as a young person to appreciate the beauty of your body.
Mm.
Because the danger is you grow up with a superficial view of your body and it doesn't fit. You know, I'm not a supermodel. Oh, dear, my body's terrible. But actually, your body's wonderful.
Well, and if you think of your body as a house, right, and then we have all of these different rooms within our house and all of the rooms interconnect and we have this, you know, from a very, very young age, you know, and I'm talking like in utero, you know, when we are first conceived, for the first 3 weeks of life, it's the energetic that brings us together. It's all energy at vibrational levels that brings the cells together in order to form who we are for the first 3 weeks of life. And then at the third week of life, the innate wisdom of the body, this self-healing, self-regulating, self-maintaining, you know, self-evolving body, says we're going to build a notochord. We're going to develop, grow, nurture the notochord. Now, the notochord is the nerve system, which is your brain and your spinal cord. And then the body goes, oh, actually, this is so important to your health. We're going to encase it in bone. And then it performs this bone around the brain and the spinal cord because it's so important to our connection within ourself, but also to the universal intelligence that exists outside of ourselves. So that connection, the energetic and the connection of it is so vitally important. And really the essence of life is about movement and energy. And the more that we can understand that we are energetic beings with this ability to adapt to our life, then it's a whole different conversation that we can be asking ourselves in terms of at those challenging times that can change the nature of the questions that we ask that can lead us down a different path that support our self-healing, self-regenerating and self-maintaining and regulating.
Number five, which we're doing, is you are a self-healing, self-regulating, self-regenerating and self-maintaining organism that is constantly adapting to life. That's a wonderful thing to have mentally too, isn't it? Because again, it's not the don't. It's not concentrating on what's wrong. It's concentrating on what's right. And you think particularly of young girls, how many suffer through a concern about their body not being right, you know, anorexia or whatever. And if you're conceiving of your body as this wonderful, intricate thing, then you have a healthy regard for it and a healthy mental attitude to yourself and to the world. It's so wonderful. This is life-affirming, life-making points, Sarah. They're almost too easy to run through and not appreciate the depth and significance of.
Yeah, I think it's the magnitude, isn't it? You know, like if you really connect with them, it's like, wow, actually, that is life-changing.
And at some level, you know, it's all true. You know what I mean? It's a truth that you're speaking that it's experience affirms, but you find you often fall short. And in particular, when we come to number six.
Limited thinking leads to limited experiences. Yeah, that's probably quite self-explanatory, right? You know, like if we're just
but very big.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things of what we manifest, you know, what we think about, we bring about, right? And if we're only going to be limited in the way that we think or what we think our capabilities are, or, and this can cover any area of life, Rodney. It doesn't have to be just in health, right? You know, if we're looking at the seven areas of life, we've got spiritual, mental, vocational, financial, familial, social, and physical. In any area of that life where we've got limited thinking, then we're going to have limited experiences. And because our, you know, the energetic of what we're made up of within our body, but also outside of our body, the energy that exists there as well, when we, you know, when we think big, we can, you know, create big too. It's that confinement of the inability to think beyond the four walls of a box, right? It's like those puzzles, those puzzles that, you know, join the dots without going outside the lines, you know, or whatever the puzzle designs are. But if you think differently and you can ask different questions, you're able to do it quite successfully. But if you're only limited by those four walls of that box, then you're going to have a limited experience of that particular puzzle that you're trying to solve. And it's no different in life as well. If you're limited by your thinking, then you're only going to get a certain outcome, again, based on the quality of the questions that you ask.
Number seven.
Never be numbed to the indoctrinated systems that are constantly around you. And I think more recently, right, over the last 4 or 5 years, this certainly comes to bear. But for us, going back to the 1990s and knowing that we wanted to home educate our kids and raise our kids without drugs or medications and all that, you know, prescribed, scheduled or over the counter, that we, you know, this one probably really comes home to roost, that there are so many indoctrinated systems around us in all of those seven areas of life that I just mentioned, but particularly we see it in education. That's why we decided to home educate and do it very differently, being okay to be different, and the health of our children. You know, the most common way to approach health is through that allopathic approach, where pathic means remaining passive. So you enter into a system where you are passive. You go to someone to get something, to take something away, and you see that person as being more educated about your body than what you are. So for us, it was about the helping to helping our kids to see the indoctrinated systems that surround us, but always falling back to the quality of the question is going to be able to help you see that indoctrinated system and therefore live outside of it. So, you know, that one is one that gets quite, it's not a drilled one, you know, it's not something that we're constantly saying, but the word indoctrinated system does come up a lot in the house, or indoctrinated education or indoctrinated minds. We do tend to speak about indoctrinated things within the house. Yeah.
It's interesting because do you run the risk? I'm treading a path. Do you run the risk of creating a scary world in some way? I mean, I described for my kids, I said, look, you know, some of the things that I've got too strong a word, indoctrinate is better, but I said, some of the things you're coming across are actually toxic. And it's because that's how I feel, that it's a toxic environment to be a young child, because there's all these adults that want to press upon you adult things, adult worries, you know, climate change, we're running out of resources, World War III, sex. And I look upon that as toxic to childhood innocence and joy, which I think is the most beautiful thing in the world. And we all aspire to have that for children. And yet our world seems hell-bent on taking it away from them. And so when you're saying to them, never be numb to the indoctrinated systems that are constantly around you, you're creating them as outsiders, aren't you?
Well, I guess it goes back to was it our second or third point, which is it's okay to be different. It's okay to think differently. And then if you want to follow an indoctrinated system, you'll do so, but you'll have awareness of what that indoctrinated system is. So you'll probably I'll hedge my bets that you're less likely to go in it. But if you do, because there's peer pressure in some way or whatever your reason may be, there's an awareness of what it is and what you're entering into. So, you know, like, for instance, you know, when our boy cut his foot and he went to the medical doctor for the first time at 17 to get stitches in his foot, he entered into a system, but he was very aware of the system that he was going into. And was able to navigate that with, you know, he knew questions that they would probably ask, etc. So it's, you know, it's kind of like forewarned, what's that saying, Rodney?
Forewarned is forearmed.
Forearmed, that's it, yeah, forewarned is forearmed. So, again, it's just, it's not about we're going to sit down and we're going to study indoctrinated systems now. It's not that. It's when the moment comes up in life that you can have the conversation around. And this might come when we do part two of this, but we used to have you know, when we were all always having dinner together. Now we're not, because they're all ages and doing different things in their life. But when, you know, up until I think our oldest was around 18, we'd always have dinner together, and we'd always call whatever came up during the day, we'd call, place it on the table if we didn't have enough time in the day to answer the question. And so sometimes our meals would go for like 3 hours because we would be sitting there discussing the point. And because it's a family nucleus, everyone gets to have their say, right? And I always believe, yes, the words that we use do matter. However, I'm always of the belief that we brought these kids into the world, and therefore it's my responsibility to show them all of me, not just a part of me. So in other words, to answer what you were saying about your daughter and the conversation you're around about toxicity, yes, you could change the words, I guess, but having the conversation is important from your perspective, because she was born to you and she wants all of you, you know, so there's not one part of you that's right or wrong. It's just a matter of showing up to give the conversation.
And parents have to trust themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Parents have to look into their own heart for their answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number eight.
So take a stance, be bold. This one is, I mean, we could talk about the bully and the bullied here. You know, you could bring in these kinds of conversations into this one. For me, we always taught our kids to take a stance and be bold. And if we did use the bully as an example, I guess, that we always told them to have a voice around whatever it is that was going on in their life or with friends or whatever, but to have a voice. Because if they didn't have a voice and they felt something within a particular situation and they didn't take the lesson, then that person will, you'll slowly move on from that person because you don't want to see them anymore, but the next person will just come into your life to give you that same lesson. So whenever there was a challenging situation, we would always look at it very close. And still today, we do the same thing. We look at it very closely. We look at the questions that we can ask around it. And then we extrapolate that into, okay, what's really going on for you and what conversations can you have with this particular person or with this particular group or with this particular employer, whatever it may be, so that you have the voice and you have the lesson. Because if you don't have the voice and you don't take the lesson, then that same example is just going to show up somewhere else in your life down the line or sooner than you expect, and you're going to have to take it anyway. So when life presents you with those challenges, face them front on. And there are ways in which you can have those conversations that are very gentle, that are very not self-affirming, but very peaceful in the way in which you communicate, and therefore you are always taking accountability. Because we've said to our kids, it's never about the other person. The other person is giving you the opportunity to love the unloved parts of yourself, basically. And as a result of that, you take accountability for whatever actions you are bringing to that particular relationship, be that work or personal or family or whatever. And if you take accountability for that and ownership over it, then the outcome is very different, and you get to have that lesson. You learn more about yourself and you learn more about other people, and you put another bow in your quiver of life
yes.
to be drawn upon in later lessons.
Tell me about that. It's not about the other person. The other person is giving you the opportunity
to love the unloved parts of yourself.
Explain that.
Yeah. So this one, people could actually go to the website and read. It's called The Bully and the Bullied. It's an article that I wrote when our son was younger and he was getting bullied by a boy, and we gave him permission to have a voice. Say whatever you feel that you need to say, and we had a conversation around it. And then we sat him down and we said, okay, what is it that you don't like about this bully? Like, what is occurring in life? And then he went through a whole lot of things that he felt the bully was this, that, and the other. And then we said to him, okay, so where in your life are you doing the exact same thing as that bully?
Mm.
So he was able to identify where he was doing those exact same things as the bully. They weren't all in one area of his life. They were in a number of different areas. And I said, so see how you are just like the bully. Let's learn to love these parts of yourself so the bully doesn't have to show up to keep giving you that lesson.
Mm.
And when he did that and he could see it and he had the voice with that person, because all about having his voice, being bold, being brave, and he was able to have that voice with that boy, and it changed instantaneously. That boy did not hassle, for want of a word, hassle him anymore. He went on to hassle the next person, whoever needed the next lesson, right? So I think when we look at bullies, we're very much looking at a the victim, the victor kind of thing. And we always taught our kids there's no victims and victors here. There are just people with exchanges, with an opportunity to learn about themselves. So let's take the lessons. Let's help you learn about yourself. And therefore the bully will learn about himself and he'll go on to the next person if if that's what he is going to do next. So who knows? We can't speak for that person. But it was about accountability. Where are you doing the exact same thing? Yeah. And it is a really, really great article. And I would encourage people to go and read that. So taking that stance and being bold, it opens up doors in many other ways.
We should remind listeners that you can go to www.vital-wellbeing.com.
Yes, that's the one.
And you will find all of this information, which is a huge amount of wisdom and intelligence. We should almost make it a wee story that it came down from an American Indian. Because, you know what I mean? It is so profound and so deep. And I love it. Number nine.
So number nine is it's about loving people for who they are, not what they have or what you want them to be. So celebrating their unique qualities, essentially. And that, I guess that is when we look at the plethora of humans that we have in the world, everybody's coming from a different, you know, walk of life. And we're all humans. You know, it's like saying to people, there's no black and white. There's just different levels of melatonin in the skin, you know, like because those that are dark need more sun and those that are whiter don't need as much sun. You know, because that's really, if we look at the fundamental difference of that, that's all it is. And so we've taught, you know, our kids to embrace people. There's a beautiful story, Rodney, that my husband, if he was here, he would be able to share more of, but I'll try and share it as accurately as I can. My husband was with our two kids and they were on a bus and they were going to the airport. And when they got on the bus, there was a homeless guy sitting there. He was obviously on some drugs and was chatting away. And my husband and the boys were sitting just in front of where he was. And the homeless guy started chatting. And some parents in those instances might be like, okay, you know, stop children, or they might pick up their children and move to another part of the bus, or they might be turn around and go, no, don't interact with people like that. But our kids and my husband turned around and they had a conversation with the homeless guy, and it was a beautiful conversation. And when it came time for my husband and the kids to get off the bus, because the homeless guy was just riding the buses round, the homeless guy said, thank you so much for that conversation. You know, I haven't had a conversation like that in years. It was something along those lines. And it was just a beautiful reflection of we are all humans having this experience. And just because someone's homeless doesn't mean they're going to kill you or harm you. It just means that they've had experiences that have taken them in different ways to what you would. So constantly trying to, you know, not trying to, but we have taught our kids that, you know, we're all humans, we're all having this experience, and to come from that position of loving them for who they are than what you have or what you want them to be. So celebrate those unique qualities that they have.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? And it's, again, very easy to bring your children up to be fearful of everyone, to be fearful of strangers and of the world. For this week, we're doing 10 of the 20, and we're at number 10.
We are at number 10. So that is, life is an adventure to be lived. So, again, this one's probably quite self-explanatory, but we've always told our kids to be in life, and we chose to do that by having them home educated, and we were always in life. You know, it was like I say to people, I was the kite with my tail behind me. I had wherever I was going in the community, the three kids were right behind me. And I was there to be their guide, you know, to help them understand how you interact with people, how you buy things, how you be in society, and that life is this adventure. And if there is something in your life that you really want to do, then as parents, how can we help you have that experience? So, for instance, our eldest wanted to go to America and play rugby, and he got a full scholarship to a university there at Life University. And he went over to have that that experience, but he didn't like that experience. He it's not what he thought it was going to be. And there was a lot of different a longer conversation. I mean, we could spend an hour on the conversations that we had, but suffice to say, life is to be lived. There is an adventure. If there's something that you want to do, how can you help yourself get there? And how, as parents, can we help you get there? And if it's not what you want it to be in terms of the length of time, it doesn't matter, because it's not about time. Time only exists in a finite mind. This is about the experience that you have and what you learn from that experience, and then you bring home with you that will help you on your next path, wherever that path may be. Because if you go and you have an experience, Rodney, and then it feels like concrete, we've also taught our kids that if it's concrete going there or being there and nothing's moving, it's not where you're meant to be. If you just pivot slightly, suddenly, poof, the door just opens wide and in you go for your next experience, wherever that may be.
So your son,
mm-hmm.
having wanted this, having achieved this, having discovered it wasn't him for whatever the reason, didn't have to feel a failure.
No, not at all. In fact, what actually, you know, came to fruition with that is that when we asked, you know, different quality questions, he realized and helped himself actualize what was this all about. He realized that he didn't want to go in the first place, once everything was aligned, he then thought that he didn't want to go. I didn't want to go. But he was so far down the rabbit hole, he felt he couldn't pull himself out. And therefore, if he did that, then he would disappoint us. He would disappoint the people that had given him a scholarship, the university, other people, the team, et cetera, et cetera. And so the lesson from that is that when you are, again, it's about having a voice and being bold and speaking up. But when you are, you know, kind of in a rabbit hole and you're going down somewhere, you're so far in that you feel you can't pull yourself out, what skills now do you have in that quiver of yours that will be able to stop you from or have you give the voice to something that you are experiencing that you're not happy with? So, again, and this will probably come up in a point when we chat and do part two, but it goes back to life is always perfect. There is perfection in everything. There is good and bad, and there is bad and good. If we choose to see and really look at the circumstances or the situations that we find or the places that we find ourselves in. So you're right, it wasn't a failure, yeah.
And it's very easy to be stubborn and dogged because this is what you're doing and just put your head down and suffer through it.
Yeah.
And what an amazing thing to have that self-awareness. It's a great credit to you. I can't wait for the part two in the next 10. listeners, you can go to www.vital-wellbeing.com and read ahead for yourself. I feel, Sarah, that you should make them as little fridge magnets or something so people can have them in front of them, or a little book. Yeah, Jordan Peterson book, you know, the 20 rules to teach your kids or the 20 things to teach your kids. That would be a great book.
Do you know what? You just gave me an idea, Rodney. Maybe I'll do like little cards to put it when people order products from us. I'll put a little card with one of the statements in their parcel.
Absolutely, because they're so deep.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
You could literally take one and we could just chat about it. It's just such fascinating. I feel truly blessed to have you on the show and to count you now as a friend. And it's wonderful to be back, wonderful to have you on. And I can't wait for part two.
Lovely. Me too. Thanks for having me, Rodney.
That was Dr. Sarah Ferrant. Remember, Vital Wellbeing. What a wonderful, wonderful woman. What a wonderful, wonderful insight. And aren't we lucky here on Reality Check Radio that we can draw upon so much wisdom stretching back in her family, so much learning that she's done at university, so much experience that she has in her practice, and she brings it all here to Reality Check Radio for us. Truly, we are blessed. Send us a text at 2057. Email me at inbox@radleycheck.radio. Thank you so much for being here and for listening.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.